Welcome, everyone, to the 16th live session of our Neuroscience Training Summit. My name is Christy Peoples. I'm a producer here at Sounds True, and I'll be your host. Today, Dr. Daniel Amen will be teaching on the Brain Warrior's Way. He's broadcasting live from San Diego, California, while the Sounds True team and I are here in our Boulder studios. A free recording of this session will remain accessible for 24 hours. And if you wish, you can also purchase the entire series with unlimited access to each recording, transcripts from each session, and bonus gifts from our presenters. And now, it's my honor to introduce you to Dr. Daniel Amen. Daniel Amen, MD, is a neuroscientist, physician. He's a double board certified psychiatrist and 10-time New York Times best-selling author. He's also a distinguished fellow of the American Psychiatric Association. That's the highest award given to its members. And he's the lead researcher on the world's largest brain imaging and rehabilitation study on professional football players. Dr. Amen believes that brain health is central to all health and success. Welcome, Dr. Amen.
Thank you so much. What a joy to be with you again. And I hope people find this session really helpful. So to advance the slides, I'm going to say next. So let's go to number two. And what I want to do is start this story. Actually, it's the summer of 2010. And I just finished my second book on the connection between physical health and mental health. And I was really happy. It was a Sunday morning. We were getting ready to go to church, and I just remember how happy I felt that day. And as we got to church, I told my wife, Tana, to drop Chloe, our six-year-old at the time, off at Children's Church, and I would go save us seats. Next. And as I walked toward the sanctuary, I saw hundreds of donuts for sale for charity. And all of a sudden, I wasn't so happy anymore. Because I'm like, I'm going to church to get my soul fed. These people are trying to kill me. Because there's not one healthy thing about donuts, not one. Next. And then next again. And then right around the corner from the donuts was bacon and sausage cooking on the grill. And I found out now I'm not only not happy, I'm irritated. Next. And right before I walked into the sanctuary, there were hundreds of hot dogs being cooked for after church. And I just, in my mind, and I want you to be like me, in that whenever you see a food, you actually see the label for the ingredients. And there are a lot of unhealthy things in hot dogs. Next. And as I sat down, the minister started talking about the ice cream festival they had the night before. And now, literally, I'm furious. Next. And so I start typing on my phone. And when my wife sees me in church, when she finds me, she sees I'm typing on my phone and she gives me that look that only your wife can give you, like, why the hell are you on that thing in church? Don't you know you're going to hell? Next. And so I showed her what I was writing. Go to church, get donuts, bacon, sausage, hot dogs, ice cream. Next. They have no idea they are sending people to heaven early. Next. Save them, then kill them. Next. This is not the plan. And I prayed that Sunday morning that God would use me to change the culture of food at church. Now, as we go along in this hour and you hear me talk, you're going to realize I have an attitude problem. And while I was praying, I'm like, that is just the dumbest prayer you've ever prayed. How's that going to happen? You're a psychiatrist. You do imaging. You're trying to change psychiatric medicine to get them to act like real doctors and actually look at the organ they treat. And how are you going to change the food at church? And I just told God, I don't care. That's my prayer. Deal with it. Next. And no lie, 2 weeks later, Pastor Rick Warren from Saddleback Church called me. Rick and I had never met. And he'd seen me on public television. And he said, Dr. Amen, I'm fat. My church is fat. Will you help me? And I was just thinking about the prayer. I was pretty excited because it seemed like there was a connection. And together with my friend Mark Hyman, Rick, Mark, and I created something for Saddleback Church called the Daniel Plan. Not named after me, but after the prophet in the Old Testament who would not eat the king's bad food. The first week, 15,000 people signed up. And over the first year, the results were truly spectacular. They lost 250,000 pounds, and people reported better energy, focus, creativity, sleep, and mood, reductions in stress, blood pressure, blood sugar, sexual dysfunction, and medications. Next, so you can actually see Pastor Warren was down 50 pounds, and the stories were just incredible. And then, together with Pastor Warren, we wrote a best-selling book called The Daniel Plan, and now literally thousands of churches around the world are doing our program. So I'm really proud of that, excited about that, feel blessed and honored to be able to have done that. Next. But, you know, as I've done that and that experience at church that Sunday morning in August of 2010, it became really clear to me that you are in a war for the health of your brain. Next. Everywhere you go, someone is trying to shove bad food down your throat that will kill you early. Next. The real weapons of mass destruction. And I'm not saying this jokingly or lightly. The real weapons of mass destruction are highly processed, pesticide sprayed, high glycemic, low fiber, food-like substances stored in plasticized containers. Next. These same food companies use neuroscience tricks to hook your pleasure centers. So here's Catherine Webb in a commercial for Carl's. And you know, next, there's no way she would be eating this cheeseburger and have a body like this. It's just not true. But the food companies know sex sells. And they are making an unconscious connection in your brain that if you eat this food, she will want you. She will not want you. I can just tell you that. And if she eats that food, she will not look like she looks. In fact, on this set, she had a spit bucket. So every bite she took, she literally spit it out. But it's a war. And these food companies know how to push on your nucleus accumbens, that's the pleasure center in your brain, to hijack it and ultimately steal your health. Next, technology companies are in on this war as well. They continually create addictive gadgets that hook your attention and distract you from your loved ones. Next, according to a new study from Microsoft, the human attention span is now 8 seconds. A goldfish is 9 seconds. Literally evolution going the wrong way. Next slide. And this war has consequences. Next. Alzheimer's is expected to quadruple in the next 35 years, and there is no cure on the horizon. And the really awful news is that if you are fortunate enough to live until you're my parents' age, 85 or beyond, you have a 1 in 2 chance of having lost your mind. 50% of people 85 and older will be diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease or another form of dementia. And the big problem is it starts, based on the imaging work we do here at Amen Clinics, it starts in your brain literally decades before you have any symptoms. And it's not just Alzheimer's disease. Next slide. So this slide shows two SPECT scans. This is the work we do here at Amen Clinics. I have 6 clinics around the United States, soon to be 7. We're going to have a new clinic in Chicago this summer. And we do a study called brain SPECT imaging. And I'll tell you the story about imaging in a bit. But here are two scans, healthy on the left, a 59-year-old woman with Alzheimer's disease on the right. And likely, she started to have brain changes in her teens or in her 20s. So those of you that are waiting to have memory problems before you get serious about being well, you really want to rethink that position. Whenever you get enlightened about brain health, now's the time to get serious for the rest of your life so that you can avoid things like dementia. Next. The caption is, if you knew a train was going to hit you, would you get out of the way? In this image, a train had actually just run over 2 women who were on a railroad track. Now, they didn't die. They laid down flat on the tracks. But you have to ask yourself, why are these 2 women on an active railroad bridge with no way out? And that's how I think most people in our society are. No one's thinking about the brain because you can't see it. You can see the wrinkles in your skin or the fat around your belly, and you can do something when you're unhappy with it. But because we don't typically screen the brain like we screen colons or like we screen cervixes or breasts, the people just don't care about their brain, so they don't know that a problem is about to hit them. Next slide. The top says depression, one of the greatest killers of our time. It has gone up 400% since 1987. So people should be asking why. And now 23% of women are on antidepressant medication. 23% of women between the ages of 20 and 60 are on antidepressant medication. And having depression is actually one of the major risks for Alzheimer's disease. Next slide. New study that came out in 2015 reported that 50% of the U.S. population is either diabetic or pre-diabetic. That's a disaster, because diabetes damages your blood vessels, increases your risk of things like stroke, blindness, depression, and dementia. And it's a direct reflection of the toxins in our society, but also our high glycemic, low fiber diets. Next slide. Most people know this is true. 2/3 of America is overweight. 1/3 of us are obese. Obesity is a risk factor for 30 medical illnesses, including 11 different kinds of cancer. And there are dozens of studies now, I published 2 of them, that report as your weight goes up, the actual physical size and function of your brain goes down, which should just scare the fat off anyone. Next, you see a dinosaur, and I apologize for this. It's rude, and I apologize for it. But a number of years ago, I coined a term called the dinosaur syndrome to get people really serious about their health. Big body, little brain, you're going to become extinct. And I apologize if I hurt anybody's feelings, but you know, I'm like a huge fan of a verse in the New Testament. It's John chapter 8, verse 32, know the truth, and the truth will set you free. We're in a war for the health of our brains. We need to be much more thoughtful in what we do, what we eat, how we spend our time, and the gadgets we're addicted to. Next slide. I love this slide. Because what I figured out a long time ago is that the answer is not to actually see these as separate disorders, but rather as different expressions of the same unhealthy lifestyle that have exactly the same cure. What we here at Amen Clinics call the Brain Warrior's Way. Next slide. So if you want to survive and thrive, you must become a brain warrior. So a brain warrior is someone who's armed, prepared, and aware of the traps for our health and our society, and they do something about it for themselves and for those they love. Next slide. So let me tell you a little bit about how I became a brain warrior and a leader of the movement that my wife and I are trying to build. Next slide. I am in the middle of seven children. I'm third. And growing up, my dad called me a maverick. Next. And to him, that was not a good thing. So apparently, I've had an attitude issue my whole life. Next slide. 1972, Vietnam was going on, and we still had a draft in this country. I turned 18 that year and had a very low draft number, which meant bye. And I joined and became an infantry medic, and that's where my love of medicine was born. But about a year into it, I realized I hated being shot at, and I didn't like sleeping in the mud. And so I got myself retrained as an X-ray technician and developed a passion for medical imaging. Next. As our professors used to say, how do you know unless you look? This becomes a major theme in my life. Next. 1979, I'm a second year medical student when someone I love tries to kill herself. And I bring her to see a wonderful psychiatrist, and I came to realize if he helps her, which he did, it wouldn't just help her. It would ultimately help her children and even her future grandchildren, as they would be shaped by someone who is happier and more stable. Next. I fell in love with psychiatry because I realized it has the potential to change generations of people. And I have believed that and have been in love with being a psychiatrist for the last 37, 38 years. Next slide. 1991, now I'm a psychiatrist for nearly a decade. I go to my first lecture on brain SPECT imaging. SPECT is a nuclear medicine study that looks at blood flow and activity. It looks at how the brain works. That one lecture combining SPECT imaging with psychiatry, next again, led to a revolution that just changed everything in my life. Over the next 25 years, my colleagues and I would build the world's largest database of brain scans related to behavior, totaling now 125,000 scans on patients from 111 countries. Next. So here's an example of a healthy scan. The color doesn't matter. It's really the shape you should be looking at. Full, even, symmetrical activity in the healthy one. The person who has two strokes is obvious. Next slide. We talked already about what Alzheimer's disease is. It starts in your brain decades before you have any symptoms. You can actually see the back half of the brain is deteriorating. This classic pattern for Alzheimer's disease has been described in the medical literature for over 30 years. Next. Traumatic brain injury. You can see the damage in the front part of the brain. One of the biggest lessons I've learned from imaging is mild traumatic brain injury ruins people's lives, and nobody knows about it because most people with traumatic brain injury, they end up seeing a psychiatrist or a psychologist or social worker, counselor, or marital therapist, and none of those professionals are looking at the brain. Next. When I first started doing imaging, I was the director of a dual diagnosis unit, which is a psychiatric hospital unit that takes care of drug addicts. And their scans were so awful. that I eventually took them home to my four children and induced anxiety disorders in all four of them when it came to drug abuse. The real reason not to use drugs, they damage your brain. Next. 1992, I went to an all-day conference on SPECT at the American Psychiatric Association and met other people around the world who were doing SPECT. It was very exciting. But at that same meeting, researchers from places like Harvard and the National Institute of Mental Health complained that the scans were not a clinical tool. They were just for research. Well, having an attitude problem, I went, well, that's just got to be the dumbest thing I've ever heard. You're really going to take taxpayer dollars and study these issues, but not make it a practical tool for me. I was really unhappy about that. And so I let them know I thought that was the dumbest idea. Next, because without imaging, psychiatrists, psychologists still act like doctors did in the 1840s, not 1940s, 1840s, when Lincoln was depressed. So I love Lincoln. I'm a huge Lincoln file. And many people know Lincoln suffered from bouts of major depression. What they don't know is when he was 10 years old, he was kicked in the head by a horse and was unconscious all night long. And we know traumatic brain injury increases the risk of depression and suicidal thoughts and behaviors. When he was depressed in the winter of 1840, he went to his doctor. His name was Anson Henry. And how did Dr. Henry diagnose Lincoln with depression? He talked to him. He looked at him. He looked for symptom clusters, then diagnosed and treated him. You tell me that's not exactly what happens in 2017, that most psychiatric diagnoses are made without any imaging information based on mental status exams and DSM-5 symptom clusters. It's a little nuts if you ask me. Next. Psychiatrists are the only medical specialists who rarely look at the organ they treat. Think about it. Cardiologists look, neurologists look, orthopedic doctors look. Every other medical specialist look, psychiatrists guess. And I've not been okay with that. I think we can do better. Next. You've heard it said, a picture is worth 1,000 words. Next. But a map is worth 1,000 pictures. A map tells you where you are and how to get to where you want to go. Without a map, you are lost. And I would argue without imaging, mental health professions are not nearly as effective as they could be. Next. When I first started doing imaging, I was so excited about it. I scanned everybody I knew. I scanned an aunt who had a panic disorder, a friend with a temper problem, and then I scanned my mom. And she had a stunningly beautiful brain. It was actually the best brain I'd ever seen to that point. And still today, it rivals among the best brains I have ever seen. She was 60 when I first scanned her, and now she's 85 and is sharp, thoughtful, loving, consistent, reliable. She has the behavior of someone who has a good brain. Next slide. And then I scanned myself, and at 37, my brain didn't look nearly as good as her brain, which really irritated me. I come from a very competitive family. And I'm like, why does my brain look so bad? I don't drink. I never smoked. I didn't do drugs. But I played football in high school. And I had a lot of bad habits. I was overweight. I didn't sleep very much. I was chronically stressed building practice. And I was not happy with my brain. So I developed something I call brain envy. I wanted my mother's brain. And it has led me on this journey, my brain warrior's way, to have a better brain, because with a better brain comes a better life. So if you have a damaged brain like mine, can you make it better? Well, next, this is my brain 20 years later, fuller, fatter, healthier because I do the things I'm going to teach you to do. I'm a complete warrior because I want my brain to be better. I never want to be a burden to my children. And quite frankly, I love my four children. I never want to live with them. I never want them to decide what I wear, when I'm going to brush my teeth, what I'm going to eat. And I for sure don't want them worried about taking away my driver's license. My independence is dependent on the health of my brain. So you have to know why you want to do the right thing. Otherwise, there are too many choices to do the wrong thing. Next slide. Imaging actually changed everything in my children's lives, as me and my four children. And next, you see the red circles around my two son-in-laws. The rule in my house was if you dated my kids for more than 4 months, you needed to be scammed. next slide. I got divorced about 17 years ago, and I told myself if I ever got married again, I'm going to scan the person. I mean, the most important part of her I wanted to see was her brain. And so I met Tana about 12 years ago, and I really liked her. She's a neurosurgical ICU nurse. She's really pretty. She's smart. And so after about 2.5 weeks, I said, hey, you haven't seen the clinic. So you want to see the clinic. So she came over. We scanned her. Next. That's her in the imaging camera. Next. She has a beautiful brain. And so several years later, next, I married her. I think if you at all work with couples, you need to be thinking about the brain. Because it's your, you know, being married with a good brain is hard. Being married with a troubled brain, really hard. Next slide. One of the things I loved about imaging is it decreased stigma almost immediately. My patients saw their problems as medical and not moral. Next, it decreased shame and guilt. I love that. It increased, next, forgiveness and compassion from families. Next. And what I really loved is it completely changed the discussion around mental health. Next. No one wants to see a psychiatrist. Next. No one wants to be labeled as abnormal or defective. Next. But everybody wants a better brain. Next. What if mental health is really brain health? And this is what I've come to believe over my long career, is if I can get you a better brain, if together we can help you have a better brain, you will have a better life. Next. And some of the things that hurt your brain. So brain health is not hard. It's three things. Brain envy, you got to care about it. Avoid anything that hurts it. We'll talk about that. And do things that help it. Care, stop, do. Just remember it. And the tiny habit that will help you plant this in your life is if every day you ask yourself, what I'm going to do today, is it good for my brain or bad for it? I've been playing that game since my daughter, Chloe, who's now 13, was 2. And she's a warrior. But it takes time, right? I mean, when you go to church and daddy, I want a donut, or daddy, I want a brownie, or I want, you know, whatever it is that wasn't good for her. And I didn't always say no, but I always told her why. Is this good for your brain or bad for it? And so one of the big societal issues is marijuana. Is it good medicine? Should it be legal? It's legal in 26 states. In 10 states, it's legal for dementia. So we just published a study in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease. It was highlighted in the Daily Mail and got all sorts of chatter online on 1,000 subjects who smoke pot compared to people who didn't smoke pot. Every area of their brain was lower, including the hippocampus, the seahorse-shaped structure in your temporal lobes that gets short-term memories into long-term memories. It shrinks your hippocampus. It's not good medicine. Now, I'm a huge fan of legalizing marijuana because please don't put potheads in jail. I mean, seriously, put them in a cage, feed them bad food, chronically stress them, and let them hang out with people who do bad things. That has just got to be the dumbest thing. But let's not say it's good for you, because it's not. It gives you what looks like a toxic brain. So a healthy scan on the left, an 18-year-old with a toxic-looking brain on the right. Next slide. We also published a study recently, actually just this month, showing we could distinguish depression from dementia using imaging with high levels of accuracy. Next slide. So for many, many years, my work was considered very controversial. I used to joke, we used to live on the bleeding edge as opposed to being on the cutting edge. And it changed, though, in 2015. We published two studies showing we could distinguish post-traumatic stress disorder from traumatic brain injury with over 90% accuracy on over 21,000 people. It's the largest brain imaging study ever done. Discover Magazine last year listed their top 100 stories in science for 2015. Number 18 was Tesla's new battery. 20 was the discovery of a new vegan dinosaur species, the Chileosaurus. And number 19 was our work. Brain scans may lead to better diagnoses. We are so excited about this because it needs to be mainstream. There's no reason imaging in psychiatry should be controversial. What should be controversial is not using imaging in psychiatry. Next slide, please. The most exciting lessons, just so we're on the same page, that's the title of the slide, most exciting lesson from 125,000 scans, is you're not stuck with the brain you have. You can make it better, even if you've been bad to it, and we can prove it. Next slide. So we did the world's first and largest study on active and retired NFL players. Next. In 1994, the NFL formed its concussion committee. Next. Yet it never sponsored a brain imaging study on players. Next. Instead, they studied rats. Next. They actually put little tiny helmets on rats and whacked them in the head repeatedly, threw them down laundry chutes, abused them, and then would sacrifice them and look at their brains. Next. And the commissioner of the NFL in front of Congress in 2009 said the NFL didn't know if playing football caused long-term brain damage. They were still studying the issue. They didn't want to know the answer to the question. Next. The problem with the NFL position, next, is if you don't admit you have a problem, you can't do anything to solve it. All therapists know this is true. If you don't admit you have an alcohol problem, you can't fix it. If you don't admit you have bipolar disorder, you can't get it under control. If you don't admit you have marital problems, she very well may leave you because you didn't take care of the problem. Next. Brain-damaged players were left without help or hope. They were killing themselves, killing other people. I mean, it was a nightmare. It was all highlighted in the movie Concussion, starring Will Smith, where I was a consultant on, because the writer-director had followed some of my players. Next. So in 2009, Amen Clinics and the NFL Players Association did the first and largest study on active and retired players. Next. Imaging changed everything. Next. We published our first study in 2011 on 100 players showing global damage on their scans and severe issues with memory, four times the risk of depression than the general population, high levels of insomnia and pain. Next. One of my favorite players, and actually the one that started all of this for me, was Anthony Davis. He's the Hall of Fame running back from University of Southern California. He was called the Notre Dame Killer because in 1972 he scored 6 touchdowns against the University of Notre Dame. When Anthony came to see us, his brain was clearly damaged, especially in his frontal lobes and in his temporal lobes. Next. Another one of my players who I love, Duval Love, was morbidly obese. Next slide. And his brain looked awful. He was an offensive guard. We actually found that offensive linemen tended to have the worst brains. Not that they had the most concussions. They didn't. They had the highest number of subconcussive blows from the repetitive trauma of being on the line. Next slide. So when we did the study, our goal was not to show that playing football caused long-term brain damage. I think most thoughtful 9-year-olds would figure that out. It was to see if we could repair their brains, rescue their brains, improve their brains, and stick with me, because the answer is cool. So we put them on the Amen Clinic's brain optimization program. Next slide. So the first thing we did is assess their brain. If you don't look, you don't know. Stop lying about it. So you have to look. Next slide. So we map them. We use 2 studies, SPECT, and something called quantitative EEG. And the level of damage was terrible. But at least we have a map so we know where we're starting. Next slide. The next thing we did is we assess their physical health. So we began to know and optimize their important health numbers, like body mass index. What did we say? As your weight goes up, the size and function of your brain goes down. We actually ran an NFL weight loss group because half of our players were obese. We'd measure their blood pressure, took their fasting blood sugar levels, their hemoglobin A1C, that's your blood sugar over time, cholesterol, C-reactive protein, which is a measure of inflammation, vitamin D, thyroid, testosterone. And did you know people who have brain trauma have low hormone levels because the trauma damages the pituitary gland and turns off hormone production in your body? We also measured their omega-3 index, and we're about ready to publish a new study that shows if your omega-3 level is low in your body, your hippocampus, those seahorses, they begin to shrivel and shrink, sort of like if you're smoking pot. Next slide. It's actually a direct connection of hippocampal volume and omega-3 index. So you want to make sure you're taking fish oil or you're eating fish 2 to 3 times a week, sustainable fish, high in omega-3s, salmon, sardines, mackerel, trout. Next slide. It's actually, we did a study of 50 consecutive patients, Damon Clinics, who were not taking fish oil. 49 of them had suboptimal levels. The 2 people on the right are taking really high quality fish oil. It's actually mine on the bottom right. So I was pretty happy about that. And my CEO is the top right. Next slide. The third thing we do is we go after healing your brain in multiple ways. So it's never, oh, you have a brain issue, take ginkgo. Oh, you have a brain issue, take fish oil. Oh, you have a brain issue, take vitamin E. Oh, you have a brain issue, take Prozac or take Adderall. No. That's not how we work here at Amen Clinics. You have to fight the war on multiple fronts. Next. So we used omega-3 fatty acids for inflammation and mood. Next. We would use ginkgo and vinpocetine nutraceuticals for blood flow and to enhance memory. Next. We'd use B vitamins, acetyl L-carnitine, and phosphatidylserine for nutrient loading and energy. Next. Huperzine A that boosts acetylcholine, which is often low in Alzheimer's disease and is low with head trauma and aging. Next, alpha lipoic acid for blood sugar stabilization, and N-acetylcysteine, which is a super antioxidant and has been shown to be helpful for cravings, addictions, and resistant depression. So we would go after healing the brain in multiple ways. Next slide. And then what we did is we went after all the risk factors that steal your mind. So we know what they are. So if you were overweight, we would help you with that. If you were diabetic, we would change your diet. If you had heart disease, we would change your diet. If you had erectile dysfunction, it's all about blood flow. We would treat that by improving your blood vessels. I'm not going to go through each of these because of time, but we would attack every risk factor that steals your mind, that steals your brain. Next slide. On our program, next slide. 80% of our players were improved. Next. Next. Especially in next. And then go down to the end of the slide. Memory, attention, mood, and sleep. And we published this, that we could, in fact, reverse brain damage using the approach I just gave you. Multiple vitamin that had the B vitamins in it, omega-3 fatty acids, and a multiple mechanism nutraceutical approach. And then we put in lifestyle factors attacking all the risk factors. 80% of our players showed improvement. We're like little kids, so excited, because no one had ever published a study that you can reverse chronic brain damage. Next slide. So here's Duval Love, before and after. Significant improvement in 12 months. And now for Duval, we are 8 years later. He actually went back to school, got his master's degree. Next slide. And he lost 110 pounds. Because he didn't want to be a dinosaur. Next slide. Fred Dreyer is one of our players. He was a defensive end for the Los Angeles Rams, also later became an actor. And he said, with the program I've replaced, a part of me that had slowly slipped away. My mind is sharper, and I have the mental energy and clarity I had lost. And his brain was better. Next. And Anthony Davis, this is actually before and after 10 years, because I first saw him in 2007. It's hard to believe it's 10 years. His brain is remarkably better. And partly it's because he just did what I asked him to do. Next slide. So this is me and AD. He's always dressed very well. Next slide. Reversing brain damage is an exciting new frontier, but the implications are really much larger than football. Next slide. We need to reverse the brain damage of addiction, and we can. Next slide. ADD or ADHD, and we can. Even people who have dementia. And I get so excited that when people get dementia, as in this case, the doctor told the husband, you should find a home for your wife because in a year, she won't know your name. This is now 8 years later. She still knows his name. And we showed significant improvement in her brain. These before and after scans are only 10 weeks apart. Next slide. So, do you want to be a brain warrior? That's my passion. That's what I'm excited about, is teaching people what I know so that you can be armed, prepared, and aware. Next slide. But in order to be a brain warrior, you have to be serious. And so I ask people, and I'm not kidding at all when I say this, are you a sheep or a sheepdog? Next slide. And then go down all the way to the bottom of the slide. Are you a sheep? Sheep or a flocking animal? They go with the herd. They're docile and easily led. They live in denial. and they pretend all is okay and the wolf will never come. And actually, sheep are annoyed by sheepdogs who remind them that trouble may be nearby. So if you're not living a healthy lifestyle, I may have irritated you and I apologize. And sheep don't like sheepdogs. Next slide. Or are you a sheepdog? I'm a sheepdog. Next. Are you serious? Highly trained? Purposeful? Do you love your sheep even when the love is not returned? Think parenting. Would you give your life for the flock? And we're about creating sheepdogs, brain warrior sheepdogs. Next slide. Who needs you to be their sheepdog? I love that picture. Next. So when I first started doing imaging, I was so excited about it. But the controversy that was generated around imaging in psychiatry, it really threw me for a loop. Because I'm like, well, why wouldn't you want more information? And I didn't make 5 cents on imaging for the first 4 years because I referred scans to another clinic. I'm like, so what's the beef? But when you don't do something that's standard of care, people hate you because they don't get it. And if you're doing something and they're not, well, they often think there's something the matter with you. And so there was so much negativity around it that I actually stopped talking about my work for a couple of years. And then in April 1995, I got a call late one night from a mother who told me Andrew, her 9-year-old son, had attacked a little girl on the baseball field that day for no reason out of the blue. And I was horrified. And she said, Dr. Heyman, he's different. He's mean. He doesn't smile anymore. I went into his room today and found 2 pictures that he had drawn. One of them he was hanging from a tree. The other picture he was shooting other children. Andrew was Columbine or Aurora or Sandy Hook waiting to happen at 9 years old. When I saw him the next day, I told her to bring him to the clinic. I said, and I was talking to Andrew, I said, what's going on? And he said, Dr. Heyman, I don't know. I'm mad all the time. I said, is anybody hurting you? He said, no. I said, is anybody teasing you? He said, no. Is anybody touching you in places they shouldn't be touching you? No. And I was suspecting he had a left temporal lobe problem because we'd already correlated the left temporal lobe underneath your temple and behind your eye to violence. And when we scanned him, next slide, he was missing his left temporal lobe. I'd never seen that. I've seen it almost 50 times since then. But he had a cyst the size of a golf ball occupying the space where his temporal lobe should have been. And I had trouble getting someone to take it seriously. I had one doctor say he wouldn't operate on him until he had real symptoms. So I have a homicidal, suicidal child, but we won't operate him on him until he has real symptoms. Anyways, I found a neurosurgeon who took the cyst out. Next slide. And after surgery, I got 2 calls, one from his mother who said the surgery went really well. And when Andrew woke up from surgery, he smiled at her. She said he hadn't smiled for a year. The next call was from his neurosurgeon who said, oh my God, I'm so glad you sent Andrew to me because the cyst was so aggressive, had put so much pressure on his brain that actually thinned the bone over his temporal lobe. He said within 6 months, Andrew would have been dead. And the reason I tell you this story is Andrew is my godson. He's my nephew. I'm his sheepdog. And it's because of him I developed the spine around the controversial work I was doing, because if you don't look, you don't know. You need to stop lying about that. We can do better in psychiatry, and we need to add imaging. This is Andrew, next slide. 25 years later, or no, it's 22 years later. He's engaged, he owns his own home, he has a job, he pays taxes, and people go, but isn't imaging expensive? And I'm like, no, imaging's cheap. Having a brain that doesn't work right, that's expensive. Next slide. So if you're going to be a brain warrior, the first question you have to ask yourself, because you're in a war for the health of your brain. Nobody goes to war unless they know why. I just finished listening to Bill O'Reilly's book, Killing the Rising Sun. And it was an awesome book. And American soldiers in World War II were passionate because we'd been attacked at Pearl Harbor. And so you have to ask yourself, why would you passionately be a warrior? Next slide. So you got to know why. So I'm a warrior for Andrew, so I can continue to do my work. I'm also a warrior for Emmy. So I have four grandchildren, and I love them all dearly. And when Emmy was born, she was born floppy. You know what that means? She had no muscle tone. So you'd hold her, and she'd flop, as opposed to the other three grandbabies. You'd hold them, and they'd hold you back. At 5 months old, her illness showed itself when she started to have wicked seizures. One day she had 160 of them. And she went to the hospital. She was diagnosed with something called West syndrome, where 30% of these children die before the age of three. Many of them never walk. They have issues with mental retardation. And the doctor told me he wanted to put her on a medicine that was $26,000 a dose and had more side effects than you can imagine. I was horrified. And I said, well, why don't we try the ketogenic diet? And he said, oh, there's no science behind that. And I was talking to him from a hotel room in Boston where I was lecturing. And my wife said she knew the relationship went sour when I asked him if he knew how to read. I'm like, you're kidding, right? There's 70 studies on the ketogenic diet, most of them done on children, cut seizure frequency by 50%. The first one was done at the Mayo Clinic, the little tiny hospital in Minnesota. The rest of the studies have been done at Johns Hopkins. You've heard of Johns Hopkins? And I was just livid. And he said, well, Dr. Amen, if you want to do that, I won't be your doctor. And I'm like, are you kidding? You're fired. Again, my attitude problem came out. I said, because how did you get out of medical school without passing informed consent? Your job isn't to tell us what to do. Your job is to tell us the options. And it's our job to decide. So I fired him, and on the ketogenic diet, Emmy's seizures have now been gone for 5 years. And next slide. This is a picture of her walking to preschool. She's such a cutie. So I am her sheepdog. The reason I don't eat cookies and chips and stay away from pizza and pasta and brownies and ice cream, it's because I want to live a long time, because I know this little girl's life will be better if my brain is healthy. Next slide. My last why is I have people I dearly love who need me to be healthy. So I told you what my dad said about me. He said I was a maverick, and he and I haven't always seen eye to eye. 1980, when I told him I was going to be a psychiatrist, he asked me why I didn't want to be a real doctor. And then when I got really healthy, he's like, oh, you're a nut doctor and now you're a health nut. What's with you and the nuts? And I'm like, come on, Pop, you have to get healthy. He's overweight. He's got no energy. And he's like, leave me alone. I don't get heart attacks. I give them. It's a direct quote. Next line. Then I guess it's about 2.5 years ago, he had mold in his house. He developed a chronic cough, then a heart arrhythmia, then heart failure. And someone who had never listened to me, he got depressed. He stopped going to work. He'd gone to work every day for 70 years. And now he couldn't drive. I was so worried we would lose him. And then one day he looked at me, because I've lived the message, and he said, I'm sick of being sick. What would you like me to do? I'm like, Pop, it's a war. Everything. And this guy, who at the time is 85, now he's almost 88, did everything because he's so stubborn. We assessed his brain. We checked his important numbers. He would text me food labels. Next, next, next. Next, he ate perfectly. And, you know, I have six siblings. They're always trying to give him crap. And I was like, well, your brother wouldn't want you to eat that. Why are you giving that to me? And, you know, my siblings would text me. And it's like, all he does is talk about you. Tell him to stop it. And I sort of liked it. Next, he ate perfectly. So this is an example of a brain healthy meal, colorful vegetables, healthy protein, healthy fat. Next, targeted supplements. Next, and then we started working out together. And first, literally, it's 3 pounds. And then it's 6 pounds. And then it's 12 pounds. And then it's 18 pounds. And then it's 24 pounds. And when we worked out last Sunday together, our whole workout, we lifted 21,000 pounds. He's a beast. He's a stud. I'm like so impressed. Next slide. He's playing golf again. Next slide. And I don't know why he can do this, but he figured out he could actually hold a plank longer than me. And we would have started having plank contests. And my cousin, we're all competitive, I told you that. My cousin came over and she said, I hear you're really good at planks. So am I. And she challenged him to a plank. And she went for 2 minutes. He went for 6. And then he calls me. And you know, like when you're 12 and you got an A on a test or you hit a home run in Little League, you have to like call your dad and tell him. Well, he had to call me and tell me he went for 6 minutes. And the level of joy I have felt with him getting well, because my dad's the clever person in my family. I'm not, right? Even though I'm the most educated. He's the lever person. When he got healthy, my overweight brother got healthy. My brother-in-law, who has heart disease, got healthy. And my promise to him is that he'll be better at 90 than he was at 70 by doing the right thing. Last slide. You can too. Last. That's my talk. I am here for questions.
Thank you so much, Thank you so much for that.
Can you share the details of the Daniel program? This comes from Betsy.
So the Daniel plan, and you can look it up at Saddleback Church or, you know, just Google the Daniel plan, was initially a 6-week course. And it's very much like what I talk about in the Brain Warriors Way, where it's based on 5 pillars. Faith. Why do you care? What's your reason for being healthy and living long? Food. You got to get your food right. And if I had to summarize the food, it's a low glycemic, high fiber, colorful vegetable diet filled with healthy protein, carbohydrates, and fat. And it's delicious. I mean, we probably made 500 recipes for the Daniel Plan and for the Brain Warrior's Way. I have a new book out called The Brain Warrior's Way and a new cookbook that my wife put together. And one of the big things I've learned about eating for your brain is it just tastes phenomenal. When you do the right thing, your taste buds come alive because you don't deaden them with all the sugar and salt. So faith, food, fitness. The stronger you are as you age, the less likely you are to get Alzheimer's disease. Focus, which is all about brain health. And friends. We get better together or we get sick together. And it's those five pillars that we teach over and over and over and over and over. And the program's now being done in thousands of churches around the world.
Gretchen asks, is there any evidence linking social media to increased vulnerability to dementia?
Not that I'm aware of, but you know, social media is actually fairly new. So you need a longer term study for that. There's plenty of evidence for social media and ADD, social media and depression. And we know that depression is one of the major risk factors for Alzheimer's disease. There's also social media risks with social isolation. Social isolation is a risk factor for Alzheimer's disease and obesity. So turn off your phone, go for a walk.
Can you talk about the impact of childhood abuse, disorganized attachment, and whether that type of brain can return to high levels of health?
You know, it's a complicated answer, but there's no question. There are 30 million adult children of alcoholics, and many of them are highly functional. So When I think of childhood trauma, I think of, well, how did they feed you? Were there any head injuries in that? Was there mold in the house? And why were they being abusive? Was it because of mold and damage to them and also damage to you? Was it an infection like Lyme that you also could have gotten? We now know Lyme is sexually transmitted as well as you get it from the bite of a deer tick. And maybe another way to answer this question is whenever you want to understand someone, you always want to understand the four circles of health and illness. So what's the biology like? What's the psychology like? How do they think? What was their development? How do they think currently? What's the ant population in their head? Ant stands for automatic negative thoughts, a term I coined many years ago. What's the social circle? Who are they hanging out with? And what's their spiritual circle? Why do they care? You know, what's their deepest sense of meaning and purpose? Do they believe they're on the planet by random chance or there's some creative design? And healing people, even people who've had chronic long-term brain trauma, like an RNFL group, we've shown it's absolutely possible. And I would give that same answer to someone who grew up with attachment issues or emotional, physical, sexual abuse, that healing is possible by doing the right things.
Given your work with the athletes in the football community and the new research that has been coming out, do you feel like there is enough being done to make up-and-coming athletes aware of the risks?
Absolutely not. I don't think there's enough being done to remediate them. I don't think there's enough being done to warn them. I don't think the NFL or the NHL or NASCAR or the Jockey Association is doing enough. We should be scanning them, screening them. And if you're going to play something that's dangerous, and people are going to do that, and they have the right to do that, I think we should always be rehabilitating them. But we just don't care enough about brain health. And because of that, people are still being hurt. I mean, it's hard to watch football because you're not just seeing lives devastated. Remember what I said early on? I became a psychiatrist because I realized I could change generations of people. When you see the head trauma on football games, what you're seeing is the destruction of generations of people. How do those men treat their wives? How do they treat their children? What's the long-term impact of that level of trauma on three or four generations of people?
Heather writes, it's horrifying to know that our attention spans are now at just 8 seconds. What does this research suggest about our ability to cultivate discipline and focus as technology continues to compete for our attention?
It's horrifying. It's part of the war that you are in. And so technology clearly makes things better. The imaging study I do is a technology study. But we have to be thoughtful and careful. We don't let it steal our relationships, that we don't let it steal new learning, working out, and we don't become dependent on it. Disturbing fact. We are diagnosing Alzheimer's disease later and later in the illness when less and less can be done about it because of our cell phones, because you have GPS. So when I first became a psychiatrist and there was no cell phones, people would often be diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease because they couldn't find their way home. And they'd be on the other side of a city that they'd lived in for 30 years, and they were confused and lost. And, you know, their families would find them. There would be a lot of drama and sadness, and they'd bring them in. And, you know, the earlier you get someone, the more you can do for them. But now, all they have to do is say, take me home to Siri, and we're picking up problems later. So one, I wouldn't do it all at once. I would get something like the Brain Warrior's Way, and I'd begin to put the habits in your life as quickly as you can. Now, there's some people like my dad, they just do everything at once. There are other people that overwhelms them, and they just want to do one thing at a time. And, you know, whatever path you want to be on is, like, completely cool with me. And I would be putting the habits in my life, especially omega-3 fatty acids, getting your important numbers checked, exercise, tons of vegetables, fruits and vegetables, especially tomatoes. Isn't that interesting? Tomatoes have been shown to have antidepressant effects. And I would be putting these habits, and then I'd talk to your doctor, of course, and slowly start to wean off. And if I was on an antidepressant for 15 years, I'd probably wean off over 6 months. I mean, I would take my good time because the antidepressants change your brain. And if you're going to change it back, obviously get yourself all the nutrients you can and then very, very slowly. And it's like, well, how do I go down that slowly? There are compound pharmacies that can actually put your medicine in a cream or a gummy, then give you, you know, really tiny reduction dosages.
Tomatoes and fruits and vegetables and everything, is there a danger of too much fruit or a certain kind of fruit elevating the levels of sugar in the system? Also, with things like tomatoes, is there information about tomatoes having different properties when they're cooked versus when they're just right off the vine? And does it matter how we take in our food?
Well, of course. And some people are sensitive to it. It's one of the nightshades. So for some people, it can cause trouble for them. I think the more they learn about it, the better it is. I'm a huge fan of tomatoes, but I don't have a problem with them. They're not a high sugar food. One of the things people should learn is about the glycemic index. How quickly does a food turn to sugar? So tomatoes really low, pineapples are really high. So you probably shouldn't have a lot of pineapple. Watermelon really high, but apples are low. Blueberries are really low. So I think the issue becomes be passionate about your brain, and that's what you go back to school with. It's how do I have a better brain and a better life? What are the things that serve my brain? What are the things that steal from my brain? And back to the question, you know, I told people was the tiny habit. You know, I've been playing the game with Chloe since she was 2. She's now 13. And it's the question, is this good for my brain or bad for it? And, you know, right now she just does what's good for her brain because she loves herself. So why do you want to do this? It's, I don't want to deprive myself. That's one of the little lies people tell themselves. But if by doing the wrong thing, you're probably depriving yourself of what you really want, which is health, longevity, memory, energy, a healthy brain, which gets you through the rest of your life. And when you act like 4 years old, I don't want to deprive myself, it's a four-year-old's mindset, you're depriving yourself of what you really want. So you got to get your mindset right. Are you a sheep or a sheepdog? It's just a critical first step.
Up the question for me whether it's possible to override the pleasure center and sort of infuse that desire for healthy choices rather than kind of being prey to the unhealthy ones. Can you say a little bit about that?
Yeah, it takes time. I knew for me, it's a process. But as soon as I read the first dinosaur syndrome study, it was done by a friend of mine, Cyrus Raji, when he was at the University of Pennsylvania. The University of Pittsburgh. I immediately lost 30 pounds because I love my brain way more than Rocky Road ice cream. So it became actually painful to do the wrong thing because I understood the science. And it's one of the reasons why I wrote The Brain Warrior's Way, is I want people to understand it through my eyes, and I want it for them to be painful to do the wrong things because they love themselves. Meghan Trainor has a new song called Me Too. I love the opening line. Just see if I can grab it from my phone. It's not the opening line, but comes from the stanza. If I was you, I'd want to be me too. And she looks in the mirror and it's like, well, how cool. And that's really what I want. I want people doing the right thing and loving themselves for it rather than having the bad attitude of, I can't do this and I can't do that. It's, I don't feel that way. I get to have an amazing dinner tonight when I get home because I think about it. And I don't know if you've ever been in a bad relationship. I have been in a bad relationship in my life and was in love with someone who didn't love me back. And it was hard for me. And I am absolutely determined to never do that again. And it's funny, I transferred that same thought to food. I'm only going to be in love with food that loves me back. When we started the Daniel Plan, I had one of the pastor's wives tell me she'd rather get Alzheimer's disease than give up sugar. And I laughed and I said, did you date the bad boys in high school? Because that's an abusive relationship. Sugar is pro-inflammatory. It increases erratic brain cell firing. It's addictive. I mean, there are just so many bad things about it. You know, it's devoid of minerals and vitamins. And I only want to do things that serve me. And that comes from a deep love for myself, for the mission, for my family. And, you know, as I look around, I'm horrified by what our society is doing to our population. It's the war I described.
I'd like to take you back to that prayer that you shared with us when you said, you know, oh God, I gotta find a way to turn this around. And you said, I don't care if it doesn't sound right, just make it happen. Can you talk a little bit about that process for you? I know you were getting increasingly annoyed at seeing the bacon and the donuts and all that stuff, but how did it click for you to know that you needed to do something for the greater good of the people rather than just saying to the church leadership, you know, this is a bad idea? How did you then decide to go to God and like sort of give this prayer sort of directive to the Creator?
Well, you know, I've been working on this for a long time. You know, I've seen tens of thousands of brains and see the destruction that happens. And then the process was, is I realized when I wrote Change Your Brain, Change Your Body, that physical health and mental health are completely connected, that your gut is connected to your brain, your heart is connected to your brain. Your liver, your kidneys, it's all connected. And if they're not right, your brain is not going to be right. And as I learned about that and I learned about nutrition, and I had just finished this book, I was just stunned at that church service, how in my face, at a place that should have been a sanctuary, was hurtful. And I'm like, I'm not okay with this. And the prayer was really, God, use me. And I had no idea how he would use me. I had like not one thought on how that would be because, you know, I'm not a pastor and, you know, I've always had a deep faith. But, and it turned out that doing the Daniel plan, I'd actually never in my life felt more like I was in the center of God's will for my life. Most people don't know, I actually went to a Christian medical school. I went to Oral Roberts University medical school. So my faith has always been a really important part of my life. But, you know, I'd spent my whole career as a psychiatrist and, you know, as a maverick one at that. And then as I got healthy, and Pastor Warren, who's a very psychologically minded pastor, he's like, this can be a big deal. And so, you know, as I talked about this spiritual circle and getting well, it became an extraordinarily purposeful time in my life. And incredibly rewarding, even though terribly exacerbating, trying to get the donuts out of Saddleback Church. You know, I mean, we're the Church of the Daniel plan. And I'm like, is, you know, my first fight with Pastor Warren. It's like, you got to get rid of the donuts. And he's like, but we were raised on donuts. And I'm like, I don't care. If you were raised on cocaine, it would still have to go. And so clearly not an easy process, but phenomenally fun.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the intersection or overlap of healthy body, healthy brain, and I'm wondering, since we're opening up this discussion a little bit about spirituality, can you also say how we might be able to get our own spiritual practice in line so that it supports our warrior stance?
Pastor Warren actually said, that being a warrior is one of the most common metaphors in the Bible. And many people are in a spiritual war. And technology perpetuates that with things like pornography and the hatefulness that's around fake news. Dr. Oz and I just did a segment on his show about fake news and the impact it has on brain function, which is fascinating. One of the things I truly love and talk about it in the Brain Warrior's Way is that prayer and meditation actually enhance brain function. And one of my favorite meditations, and I think it's just a phenomenal practice, it's called loving kindness meditation, where you repeat over and over, may I be safe, may I be secure, may I be happy, whatever words you like. And then you do it to someone you love. May Tana, my wife, be safe, secure, happy. And you do that a number of repetitions. And then to someone you're neutral on. But my favorite part of loving kindness meditation is then you then pick somebody you're angry with or mad at or disgusted with. And in this political climate, it's easy to pick. May, you know, the leader of the Democratic Party or may our president be safe, be secure, be happy. And research has found that people who do this loving kindness meditation on a regular basis have lower pain, that their hippocampus is bigger, you know, that seahorse-shaped structure we talked about, that symptoms of PTSD are less, that their mood is better, that they feel more purposeful. Forgiveness is powerful. But forgiveness combined with prayer and meditation, that's special. And meditation actually fooled me. I thought, well, and I've done a lot of hypnosis over my life as a psychiatrist and love it. And I thought, well, it would just calm down people's brains. You know, meditation and hypnosis would sort of settle down the activity in their brain. And it totally doesn't. It completely fires it up. And brains become busier and more active when you're in a meditative state. And I love that. And we published a study on meditators who did a chanting meditation. After 8 weeks, their resting frontal lobes were stronger. And that's a good thing, because your frontal lobes are like your brain's brake. It stops you from saying things or doing things that you shouldn't say or do.
Thank you for that. You know, just as you're talking us through that loving kindness meditation, it just felt really like there was a greater sense of ease and calm opening up just in that moment. Dr. Amen, thank you so very much for sharing all of this bleeding edge information and helping us to become warriors for our own brain health.
Well, you're welcome. I'm a huge fan of Sounds True, and I wish you all the success.
This concludes the 16th live session of our Neuroscience Training Summit. Once again, our deep gratitude to Dr. Daniel Amen for this outstanding presentation. Please note, the recording of this session will remain accessible for free for 24 hours. And if you wish, you can also purchase the entire series with unlimited access to each recording, transcripts from each session, along with bonus gifts from our presenters. I'd also like to thank everyone who joined us tonight. We really enjoyed your participation as well, and we thank you for the questions that you submitted too. Please join us for our next live session with Janina Fisher, who will, and that will take place tomorrow on March 28th, 2017 at 12 p.m. Eastern Time. For Sounds True, I'm Christy Peoples, and thank you so very much for joining us. SoundsTrue.com, many voices, one journey.